Hi there, this is Sharon Kernowan, and today I'm going to read you the HeraldReview.com online newspaper, and today's date is the 3rd of July, 2015. For our first headline, we'll start with the title, What the Supreme Court's Ruling Means for Your Retirement Savings. If you save a 401k plan, the U.S. Supreme Court may have just handed you some money. The court ruled anonymously that employers have an ongoing duty to monitor the appropriateness of their 401k investments. That means even if a fund was once good enough to make the lineup, it can and should get the boot if it is now, for example, too expensive relative to other available investments. In Tibble versus Edison International, the court ruled in favor of participants in the energy company's retirement plan, who had sued claiming that the investments in their plan used retail share classes instead of cheaper institutional pricing. Coupled with a handful of other prominent 401k fee cases in recent years, the investment industry is now keenly aware that fees matter, said Brooke Herman, head of data and research for BrightScope Inc., a website that maintains a database of 401k filings and information. The court is putting some rigor around the notion that retirement plan officials have an ongoing duty to monitor investments and that if they picked something 8 years ago and then didn't do anything, that's no longer acceptable. A key takeaway from the decision is that while participants individually may not be keenly focused on the details of their saving plans, employers need to be on notice that courts are expecting more from employers, said Fred Reich, a partner in Los Angeles with law firm Drinker Biddle. Every dollar that doesn't get charged to a participant over 20 years that adds up to a lot of money and can affect their retirement, he said. Many employers appear to have gotten the message. About two-thirds of all retirement plan sponsors said they were very likely to review plan expenses in 2015, and a third said they expect to change their investment lineup to cut costs, according to a survey by Aon Hewitt. While total fees have fallen substantially in the last few years due to lawsuits and federal disclosure legislations, a few wrinkles remain, Ray said. In an industry-wide white paper this year, Ray pointed out that total fees aren't the only issue participants should be concerned about because of the way certain administrative costs are assigned within plans. Participants in certain funds may be paying little or no administrative fees while their coworkers pay the full freight. While costs have come down substantially, it's important to be aware that large companies still command better purchasing power and thus, employees often pay less than their counterparts in smaller firms for 401k management. BrightScope, for example, said the average total plan cost in 2012 was 0.91% of assets per year, down from 1% in 2009. That includes administrative fees, investment advice, and other fees. But average mutual fund expenses for investment in domestic stock funds was 0.95% for plans with less than $1 million in assets, compared with 0.48% for plans with more than $1 billion in assets, BrightScope found. Now for our next headline is Rauner announces closure in response to Democrats' budget. In Springfield, Illinois Governor Bruce Rauner said Tuesday he will close a prison work camp, shutter up two juvenile detention centers, and suspend plans to build the Illinois Expressway in response to the budget plan approved by Democrats. With the spending blueprint approved in the General Assembly last week, more than $3 billion out of balance, the governor said he must begin taking steps now to prepare for the start of the fiscal year July 1st. The administration must immediately begin taking steps to manage state spending, a Rauner press release noted. Included in a list of closure and programs cut in the threatened shutdown of the Hardin County work camp is Cavin Rock. Such a move will require 180 inmates to be moved within a system that is already overcrowded. An estimated 60 work camp staff will be affected. Rauner also ordered the Department of Juvenile Justice to target one or two juvenile prisons for closure. The system has a capacity of 1,200 residents, but only 700 beds are currently occupied. The governor promised to shut down works on Illinois Expressway, a proposed toll road connecting Interstate 55 in Illinois with Interstate 65 in Indiana and Will County. In light of the state's current fiscal crisis and lack of sufficient capital resources, the Illinois Expressway will not move forward at this time, the administration noted. The laundry list of cuts is the latest salvo in the ongoing war of words between the Republican chief executive and Democrat who control the General Assembly. Democrats led by House Speaker Michael Madigan and Senate President John Curtin, both Chicago Democrats, says the budget can be balanced with a tax increase. But Runner wants a property tax freeze where compensation reform, term limits, and other business-friendly changes designed to promote job growth. Speaker Madigan, President Curtin, and the politicians they control refuse to act responsibly and reform state government. Rauner spokesman Lance Trover said it is time they come to the table with Governor Rauner to turn around Illinois. Curtin spokeswoman Rikesha Pelton said the budget plans reflect Democratic priorities to provide vital services and invest in the middle class. If the governor shares that goal, then he is invited to work with us to develop a full plan to fund our shared priorities in education, public safety, and community services. Unfortunately, today's actions signal that the governor will rather slash child care services for troubled youth and senior care rather than work out a bipartisan budget solution, Felton said. A spokesman for Madigan didn't immediately respond to a request for reaction after missing a May 31st deadline to come to an agreement on a budget. The House is set to return to action in the Capitol on Thursday. The Senate returns Tuesday. In addition to the closure, Rauner also put the state airplane fleet in the crosshairs. He said the department will ground all non-emergency uses of the state passenger planes, which provide a key link for state officials shutting between Chicago and Springfield. At the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, Rauner said he plans to close 5 state museums to visitors, including the State Museum of Springfield, a state-run artisan shop near Caesars, and Dixon Mounds in Lewiston, home to an archaeological display of American Indian remains. He also said the agency will not award any open space land acquisition development grants in the new fiscal year, even though those grants are not financed by income tax dollars. Other grants on the shopping block include tax credits used to lure businesses to Illinois and film tax credits used to bring companies to Illinois to make movies and television productions. State grants that help people pay their utility bills will also be cut off. Federal money will still be available to help pay for the low-income home energy assistance program. The plan also calls for freezing all vehicles purchases for the Illinois State Police, even though those are largely funded through an additional charge on driver's license fees rather than general revenue. Rauner also said he will begin the process of using income limits to determine whether seniors qualify for programs through the Department on Aging, and he plans to charge co-pays for parents using the child care program operated by the Department of Human Services. Next headline is State Workers Union launches public support campaign in Springfield. With negotiations of a new labor contract heading into their final months, the state's largest employee union is poised to take its message to the people. Beginning next week, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Council 31 will sponsor a series of local events at work sites across the state. The aim is to educate the public about the work the employees do on behalf of Illinoisans, AFSCME spokesman Anders Lindell said Tuesday. There will be public events where people are talking about those services and at the same time showing their commitment to a fair union contract, Lindell said. The event are part of campaign aimed at blunting Governor Bruce Rauner's tough talks on employee unions, which has led to concern that he wants to force a strike or order a lockout if a new collective bargaining agreement isn't completed by June 30th. Along with publicity, publicly criticizing the union over wages, the use of overtime and seniority, the administration privately is pushing for a wage freeze, an increase in health insurance, cost sharing, and other concessions during the closed-door bargaining talks that have been underway since January. On Sunday, as the spring legislative sessions came to a close, Rauner told reporters he was making contingencies to deal with the possibilities of a government shutdown. He will not elaborate on whether those plans are related to the union talks, but his administration has circulated a questionnaire to agency heads asking them to outline what will happen to the services they provide if a strike were to last as long as 4 weeks. Among the questions on the contingency preparation assessment was how many temporary workers or retirees will they seek to employ to keep services operating. Along with the public events, AFSCME already is running a campaign to place yard signs across the state designed to show support for the 38,000 AFSCME workers and their counterparts in other state jobs. Businesses are being offered signs that say state employees serve our community. A second sign says we support state workers. CJ Kazaram, a mental health technician at the state-operated Clyde Elkhout Mental Health and Development Center in Anna, state union workers have already placed 800 of 1,300 signs in yards and businesses. In our area, people understand how big of an economic impact state facilities are, Skaram said Tuesday. Brian R. Stedman, a prison lieutenant at the Robinson's Correction Center, said a similar run on signs happened among his colleagues. We're in a low-income, low-population part of the state. There are three big businesses in this area, and one of them happens to be the state prison. They know that these jobs are important for the local economy, Stedman said. In addition to the public campaign, the union convinced a majority of lawmakers in the House and Senate to support legislation that bars the union from striking or being locked out. Instead, an independent arbitrator will be brought in to pick a final offer. That measure is not expected to win support from Rauner. Up next is the headline study of I-72 Illinois 48 interchange planned. Indicator. Officials are set to prepare a study that could lead to an improved flow of traffic at the Illinois 48 and Interstate 72 interchange. The study is focused not only on improving the area ahead of the proposed Macomb County Beltway project, but to clear up general traffic flow issues. It's not working real well right now, said Macomb County Highway Engineer Bruce Bird, adding it was originally designed more than 30 years ago. There are a lot more trucks and run-throughs there and a lot more cars. In addition, Bird said the project could help to encourage further development in the area. There have been several meetings with the community leaders, and this is one of the things they definitely want to take a look at, he said. As a part of the study, officials will analyze existing plan layouts and vehicles and rail traffic counts in the area and develop up to four options for the interchange. The cost of the study is $49,247, which will be covered by the Illinois Department of Transportation as part of the $10 million given by the Department for Studies and Engineering related to the Beltway project. There is no timetable for the completion of the study, which will be handled by Hanson Professional Services, Inc. The plan has been passed unanimously by the Macon County Finance and Transportation Committees and will likely be voted on by the full board at its June 11 meeting. The Beltway, an estimate $150 million undertaking by federal and local agencies, seeks to connect I-72 and U.S. 51 around the south and the east sides of Decatur. The idea behind the Beltway is to separate truck traffic from residential traffic and provide easier access to I-72. Paul 6 Catholic High School moving to Loudoun County is our next headline. In Fairfax, the Diocese of Arlington is relocating one of its high schools to Loudoun County. The diocese announced Wednesday that Paul 6 Catholic High School will move from its current 18-acre campus in Fairfax City to a new site in South Riding. The move is scheduled to take place in 2020. Politics currently has a student body of about 1,000 and says it has to cap enrollment because of space limitations. The new 60 million school will be spread out on a 68 acres about 12 miles west of the current campus. Politics was established in 1983 and in recent years has sponsored nationally ranked basketball and baseball themes. Next, Shelbyville City Council okay TIFs funds for school in Shelbyville. Shelbyville schools will be getting tax increment financing assistance to add air conditioning to Main Street schools this summer after City Council reversed its position and approved the grant Monday night. Last month, the council denied a request from the schools for $70,500, 50% of the expected $35,000 cost of upgrading wiring and adding window air conditioning units to the almost century-old school building. Shelbyville High School and Middle School had already had central air conditioning projects, but the younger students had not. We want to put in the air conditioning because on hot days, if we were to let school out for the younger students, we will also have to close the high school and middle school, Superintendent Dennis Bench said last month. This will enable us to have entrance days even in hot weather in August. City Council member Tom Schiffer and Gib Smart, who had voted against the original grant's request, asked the full council to reconsider the plan. I was against this because I believe the TIV is for enhancing the tax base, Smart said. But Tom and I talked to TIF consultant Jenny Norber, and he said, we're not violating any state laws, and it's not uncommon for communities to do this. The council held a two-hour closed session to discuss personnel. When it was over, City Attorney Jack Kiley said the council had not adhered to city code in voting to hire two employees for the Public Building and Grounds Department last month. At the last meeting, we went with the belief that commissioners will fill non-management vacancies, Kiley said. It came to light that in 2006, the procedure was changed so that the commissioners is required to submit three names for consideration not less than 72 hours prior to the City Council meeting, where the hiring is recommended and the full council approved. The council defeated Smart motion that two positions be filled. One worker has already begun work, but Monday night's action might mean the hiring process for the position begins again. The hires we made 2 weeks ago were not valid, Smart said. We will re-advertise the position and start the application process for hiring the one position we have posted again. And for our next headline is the free kindergarten books their journey to first grade. And in the picture caption is Rose Williams takes photo of her son, Chandler Williams, after the kindergarten graduation and the free magnet school. Indicator, a lot happens in kindergarten. Some children arrive not even knowing their letters. Social skills are often shaky, but you never have known that at the Free Magnet School's Kindergarten Graduation Tuesday. We're here today to celebrate you and how smart you've gotten in kindergarten this year, Principal Sarah Oak said. I know that if you ask you two, every single child sitting here could say, I can read a book all by myself. And you know what? Most of us couldn't say that when we started in August, right? But now you're readers. They can do math too, she said, and can add and subtract or take away, and they couldn't do it in August either. The keys up to the school's success, Oaks told the little ones, are simple. Come to school every day and try your hardest every day, she said. The families also have two jobs for the summer, read with the children every day and give them opportunities to practice math. You get to be the boss of your mums and dens and dads and grandmas and aunties, Oak said. You get to remind them if they forget to read with you every day. Family preparation is crucial for school success, especially at this age, said Tammy Carver, kindergarten teacher. The more you work with your kids, the better they do, she said. Not every school holds a kindergarten graduation, said kindergarten teacher Roxy Dan Zeus, but Dufree staff members think it's important to recognize how much a child learns in that 1 year of school and how that knowledge is a foundation for the rest of their education. Teaching assistant Robin McFadden works in both kindergarten classrooms and loves this age group, she said. Kindergarten has changed from when she was a child. You see, such a vast difference in them over the course of the school year, she said. They have to do so much more than we had to learn. County awaits word on juror pay amendment is our next story. Indicator, Macon County officials are awaiting words on possible changes to the amount jurors will be paid for their service. A bill amending a new law has floated around Springfield the past few months that will require jurors to be paid $20 for the first and second days of duty and $32 for each day thereafter until December 1st. It will also allow a county board to pass an ordinance or resolution to collect a juror services fee not to exceed $15, which may be paid in civil actions. Macoun County Circuit Clerk Louis Durbin and other officials have watched whether the General Assembly will pass the bill. A new law, which went into effect Monday, requires counties to pay jurors $25 for the first day and $50 for each additional day they serve. The law also puts a limit on the number of jurors to 6 for civil jury trials instead of the traditional 12-person panel. But lawmakers left town Sunday without approving the amendment law. According to online records of the legislation, a special session of the House and Senate could be called in the coming weeks, where it is possible to amend laws could be brought up for a final vote in the House. Durbin said she was still in contact with lobbyists in Springfield to find out the current status of the amended bills and what direction the county would head next. The new law will drastically change how Macoun County has paid as juror in the past. Juror had received $10 a day and 10 cents a mile. The county spent just more than $48,000 in 2014 in jury fees. If the new law had been in effect at the time, Durbin has said that the county will have spent $309,000 and $200. $209,200. The change for juror service fees will help to offset some of the expected costs of the pay increase. Though Durbin said it was too early to determine how much it will raise, the fee cannot be charged on eminent domains, divorces, and family cases, among others. Proponents for the law said the extra money will help residents be more willing to do their civic duty, while some county officials criticized that the cost for paying more to juror will be more than the savings that come with smaller civil juries. According to the Illinois Trial Lawyers Association website, Illinois juror pay rates are the lowest of the 50 states and have not been increased in 40 years. And up next, altercation reportedly leads to pit bull bite for victim. In Decatur, a dispute about reckless driving to a neighborhood turned into an alleged dog-assisted assault on the accuser. Dylan Olson, 18, and Jordan Walton, 23, have been charged with aggravated battery in a public place and mob action after reportedly punching and sizing a pit bull on a man who accused the two of driving the truck recklessly on the southwest side of Decatur. On Sunday, in the 2100 block East Johns Avenue, the victim stood in the middle of the street to engage the two suspects about their reckless driving. Olson's approached the victim on foot, and the two engaged in a verbal argument that soon led to punches being exchanged, according to police. Witnesses said Walton, who had been driving the truck, approached the victim from behind and struck him in the back with closed fist. He then commanded his pit bull to attack the victim, who suffered a bite on the left hip. Olson and Walton proceeded to order the dog back into the truck as they drove away, police said. A Decatur police officer met with the victim and observed swelling and bruising on his left eye and cheek, as well as a small wound on the left hip that was consistent with a dog bite. A witness spoke with the officer shortly afterwards and verified the story and stated that Olson had been the aggressor. When reached by police Monday, Olson and Walton said they had been in the neighborhood searching for a stolen bicycle and they had been confronted by the victim. The two said they could not remember exactly what happened, but there was no physical altercation and the dog did not bite the victim. Olson and Walton are being held in Macoun County Jail on a $10,000 bond each. And up next, we have Decatur man sent to prison for attacking woman. Of course, in Decatur, Marcellus Witherspoon, who is convicted of home invasion, domestic battery, and three prior convictions for domestic battery and cocaine possession, has been sentenced to 14 years in prison by Circuit Judge Thomas E. Griffith. The trial, which began as a jury trial, was converted while on their way to a bench trial by a defense motion. At the sentencing heard hearing Tuesday, the female victim did not testify. She testified at the trial that Witherspoon, an acquaintance, entered her home at about 10 p.m. August 28 without permission. He was angry because she posted a comment on Facebook about a man's pretty eyes. After taking her keys and phone and driving off in her car, Witherspoon returned to her home about 4 hours later. He punched her in the face and hit 10 to 15 times, raped her twice, and pulled her arm back behind her back, causing extreme pain. During the trial, Macon County Assistant State's Attorney Mary Call pointed to Witherspoon's prior attack on a different woman in 2005, in which he attempted to sexually assault her with a board and batter her with a board, as showing a pattern of behavior that could help determine his guilt. In that case, he was convicted by a jury in 2008 and sentenced to 12 years in prison. Speaking on his own behalf on Tuesday, Witherspoon 40 told the judge that he realized that two wrongs don't make a right and that it doesn't matter who hit who first. "I feel ashamed that I lifted a hand at this lady at all," he said. Michelle Witherspoon 43, the defendant's older brother, appears as the lone character witness. He said Witherspoon performed out-of-body work and other repairs at a relative shops from the time of his release from prison in 2012 until a week or two before his most recent arrest. Call asked Michelle Witherspoon if he knew that his brother was in arrears more than $24,000 in child support payment. He replied that he didn't know. Call argued for a sentence of 25 years, citing numerous convictions for prior violent crimes. "His violence has escalated," Call said, adding that his record of criminality, which began with a juvenile battery conviction 24 years ago, has sent him to prison four previous times. Assistant Public Defender Karen Root argued for a minimum 6 year sentence, citing that Witherspoon had been in a relationship with her girlfriend and contributed to society by working. And our last headline before we end part one of this reading is Mary Poppins helping get Sullivan pumped for little theater season. And the picture caption is, Colleen Johnson will play Mary Poppins in the Little Theater on a Square production of Mary Poppins, which starts the summer season today. The musical through June 14 at the theater, which can be seen in the background. Now in Sullivan, Mary Poppins have been hard to miss around Sullivan as preparations have been underway for her official arrival today. Mary Poppins is the first production of the summer season for the Little Theater on the Square. The excitement level has taken up, and actress Colleen Johnson has embraced her role as Mary Poppins and started flying, the theater's executive director John Stevens said. Stevens said seeing Johnson, an Effingham native, take flight for the first time on stage really made the show come alive for him. "That's when she became Mary," Stevens said. "Everything clicked." Stevens is also hoping the momentum for Mary Poppins continues throughout the summer, with an additional number of shows added this season to both the main stage and children's shows lineup. With assistance from the Sullivan Chamber and Economic Development, Stevens is hoping to get community members more involved in and awe of what's going on at the theater. "They're stepping up to engage the whole city," Stevens said. "It's nice to see the community get involved on a different level than just coming to see a show." Large cutouts and props from the shows will be available at various businesses for people to pose for pictures, with along with having team drinks and food at places like the coffee shop, said Laurie Miner, the chamber's administrator. "The hope is for the pictures to then be spread through social media," Miner said. "It's all about getting the community involved," Miner said. "It's our biggest draw." Miner was among those who helped Mary Poppins onto the roof of the Multhier County Courthouse on Monday to take a unique view of the city. She was hoping those passing by will take note of something they don't usually see. "You don't ever see anyone up there," Miner said. "It's one of the coolest things I've ever gotten to do in town." Stevens hoped the promotions create interest in coming to see the shows, with plenty on stage to offer all ages. A total of 10 productions from today through August 23rd are set to be performed, with seasons and individual show tickets available, he said. The main stage production and family oriented, with sevens hoping to see families, especially those with other children, and those shows. The summer shows continue with Hairspray, Swing, The Wizard of Oz, The Addams Family, and Driving Miss Daisy, which extends the season longer than it has gone in the past with the addition of a sixth feature, 7 States. Hairspray was previously performed at the Little Theater in 2007, with the others new to the Sullivan Stage. Devon said The Wizard of Oz has previously been a children's show, but this time it will make more like an original movie. He said this year's children's show, with a fourth production edit, include Pickalicious, Jack and the Beanstalk, Disney Winnie the Pooh's Kids, and Princess and the Peas. Those shows engage children in the theater at a young age, while at the same time entertaining their parents too, Stevens said. It's not just going to a movie, sitting back and watching, he said. They interact and see people doing this. It's the original 3D. They're part of the story. Stevens said the children became a part of the shows with opportunities such as meeting the characters afterwards.